Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. Today I thought we'd talk about this little catchphrase that's going around called cancel culture. I almost want to call it cancer culture. Maybe I'll get all clever with it. So what is that? For those of you who haven't been around and polluted your brain with TMZ.com, cancer culture is all about the probably rooted in your millennials. I'm not sure the Zoomers are into it. Probably a decent amount of Gen Xers trying to feel righteous. And probably not much of the Zoomers, or the Boomers, excuse me. But they dig into who you are as a human being because they de facto hate themselves. This is the key behind anyone that's supporting cancer culture. God, cancer culture, there you go. The cancel culture. They hate themselves, 100%. And so, because they hate themselves, the only way they can divert away from looking at the mirror is to go outside and find someone else they hate. The Kenneth Burke scapegoat theory is in full effect. Hey, I don't like my government, so my government should give me everything for free, you know? I don't like myself, so let's see how many other people we can hate. And so, in picking people that they hate, there's two different methods. One, they'll use indoctrination. Maybe they're a big patron of The View on TV, and they tell them who you're supposed to hate. Or just watch CNN or any of this news, this fake news, which is generally all of it. And they'll tell you who to hate. And so you have a bunch of pre-qualified targets, you know, it's like used cars or something, right? But then there's the second technique, which, again, the entire mechanism is based on being triggered, which is another modern version of what you call being offended. Being offended is a fake emotion. What is really going on is you're getting angry. And you get angry up to one point, you do one thing, maybe you walk away, but then you get mega angry and then maybe you take action. Okay. By the way, it's oddly warm today. I can't even believe this. I got all bundled up because yesterday I was seeing my breath when I did an episode. Now I feel like I overdid it. Funny. So what's interesting is this is getting so bad that it's actually interfering with the entertainment industry that is still a decent area of the entertainment industry. Dave Chappelle and Bill Burr both had a comedy special on Netflix in the last year here in 2019. And in their first act of their bit, both of them took time out to engage in this cancel culture identification. You know, basically saying, you know, Dave Chappelle did an amazing job turning it on the audience. Bill Burr just talked about it. I think he was in England at the time. I couldn't tell if he was in England or if he's in Australia, but I think he's in England. I think every time he tried to do a British accent, he managed to do a fairly decent Australian accent, so that's why I couldn't figure out where the hell he was. But they're telling the audience, look, you're screwing everything up. But now I'm seeing it in a lot of different shows, you know, talk shows that are more interesting. There's a guy on Fox that has that show, Greg something or other. GG is his logo. Pretty funny guy. Got a really great panel. Two floaters and two staples. But a long time ago, I did an episode on political correctness. And I did another one on being offended. And you know, when you see and hear things like that, I did this, you know, I take time out of my life. I put this thing together. I put it out there. And I imagine that most people listen to it and they're like, you know, I'm preaching to the choir. Some people will listen to that and other people in other parts of the world talking about it. And they just sort of go, well, you know, whatever. What can you do, you know? And what I want to press upon you to maybe repeat to other people is the question of this. Do you know what you get when you blow off your need to participate in society to get rid of political correctness? You get cancel culture. You get this triggered BS. And if you were to plot it on a graph, And let's just say, you know, the top of the graph is freedom, and the bottom of the graph is tyranny. And we're going to do a line graph over time. The more the political correctness is allowed to continue, freedom goes down in the stock market. The more that you let this triggered society continue, it goes down. And what's really sad about it is an overwhelming minority of people that are doing this triggered cancel culture bullshit, but they are so persistent and the networks are such, I don't know, docile individuals that have no backbones. They're letting, you know, the key to fail in a company is to let marketing tell the company what to do. It was never, ever intended to do that. Some genius somewhere invents something. Marketing is merely tasked with getting the information out about the product. You know, there's some funny Monty Python skits about selling short pieces of string. And they did a great bit to say, okay, if you've got a horrible product that nobody actually wants, then the marketing department can help you sell something that is otherwise ridiculous. But in most cases, Steve Jobs and company create awesome hardware, and marketing goes off and hires Shide, and they create the most amazing iPod campaign. Marketing can't tell a vodka company how to make vodka, but they can tell the world that the vodka exists. Yeah, maybe do some market research and someone says, oh, yeah, the competition's made a raspberry vodka. I don't know if you guys can do that. We can't tell you how to do that, but if you did make raspberry vodka, I can sell it. That'd probably be the maximum amount of participation that should occur in this particular situation. Before we go too much further down this line, I mean, it is my direct hope that people get so disgusted with this cancel culture horseshit that we have a renaissance of freedom of speech, of true art. And we take these kids that have, you know, lined up in a protest and we just theoretically, culturally mow them down with tanks of art and freedom of speech. Just flatten them right out. You're done. Your little rant of screaming and yelling in the restaurant. You know, if any of you have had kids that have ever had an issue, if your kid screams and yells at home, they usually get a whack on their diaper. If they scream and yell in the restaurant or the department store, you don't want to be seen doing that. So you get your stuff paid for, you get your kid out, get them home, and then you smack their diaper. You know, it's one of those sorts of things, right? But we have these people disrupting society, disrupting industries that are otherwise completely functional. Imagine if these scumbags existed even 30 years ago. Let's say 1990, all the way back to, say, 1970. Think about all of the amazing creations out there that we would have lost, that would have never been able to exist because someone would have come after Mel Brooks. Who knows? The thing is there's no limit to this, right? They could be coming after Steven Spielberg, George Lucas. They could come after anybody. And the irony of the whole thing is that this is the same kind of folks, I mean, the exact folks that talk about bullying, right? They'll virtue signal every step of the way. They create a LinkedIn.com account not to find a job, not to post anything, you know, informative. They go up there to spill over their hatred from this Twitter.com, which is nothing more than the most acidic, dark pool of hatred. That entire platform is people hating each other. That's the whole platform. Facebook, you still got at least I would almost estimate a 51% of the people at least are trying to show off with their lives. They're trying to pass around positivity in regardless if it's real or not. At least that's good intentions. Maybe it's part of the law of attraction. Instagram, hey, it's just pictures and maybe showing off a little bit. You know, if you really think about, you know, conflicting concepts coming together, and there's, you know, a lot of analogies in the physical world. You might have two, you know, surface plates on the surface of the earth banging into each other. And while they're banging into each other, you have earthquakes and you have all kinds of crazy, you know, things happening on the surface that aren't good for the people on at the top. But eventually it all calms down. And you have the Rocky Mountains that then you worship because they're colossal and they're huge. It's like Mount Everest where you're up there climbing it because it's so high. It becomes a different thing. There are obviously, you know, there's like Crater Lake. Crater Lake was the result of a gigantic volcano that erupted, but now it's got a lake in it, you know. So the analogy there is that this cancel culture is forbidding growth from occurring. It's forbidding us from bringing two different thought processes together and letting it organically work out because everyone is trying to get so triggered that evolution just stops. It just stops. You know, for those who've heard every show, I will sound a bit like a broken record with this example, but this is important to me. Every single time I think about two cultures trying to come together, and there are some cultures that will never blend together, right? Sharia law can go fuck itself, right? I mean, that is like the most barbaric, fucking ancient way of thinking that Arabs should want to utterly scorch the earth where Sharia law exists. They should. It is the most embarrassing caveman method of existing on this planet. That's the truth. And it's funny that all the other methods of living together on earth work, where you could put a Hindu next to a Buddhist, next to a Christian, you know, that coexistence bumper sticker works well. But you can't have Sharia law somewhere in the middle of that sticker. But the elite love it because they're Satanists. They, you know, they love to see people die and things burn. It's, so Sharia law is just a literally an orgasmic plot for humanity. They just get to sit there and watch, oh my God, that guy shot his wife. Why? Because he was done being married to her. Oh, okay, cool. What's next? Oh, he's going to rape that little girl. Oh, cool. Let's watch that. Epstein, Branson. But Richard Pryor, for me, was one of the most masterful conductors of cultural tolerance that I have ever seen in my life. And I keep trying to think if there's anyone else like that. And I will definitely say, of course, there are comedians that drop humor a bit like he used to write it. But Richard would get on stage and his whole bit for an hour plus was all about being able to laugh at each other. You know, he would make fun of his own culture, the black culture he grew up in. But he would, I mean, you have to see Richard Pryor live on at Long Beach, I think is where it is. It is red top, black slacks, medium fro. I think it's like 76 or something like that when it was recorded somewhere in there. 76, 78, somewhere in there. I grew up with this special, which is why it rings so true to me. So here I am, just as soon as the thing got to videotape, my dad had it, and it wasn't uncommon for us to play it, you know, once a week, probably twice a month, and then once a quarter, and then once every half year, just watching it and watching it and watching it. You know, my father would imitate parts of the routine until I started doing part of the routine. And just, I mean, we just had a call 2 weeks ago, and I dropped one of the lines on him randomly and just got him dying laughing, you know? But one of the first scenes in this bit is that he comes out on stage and he's like, ah, I can see what's going on in the crowd. And he goes, I can see these, the white folks that they came late, find black folks in their seats because they just, you know, they acted like they didn't cherish the moment of coming to see Richard Pryor. They thought they could come in at the last second, you know, those assholes that come into the movie theater when the credits are rolling, because they just can't get in there on time, sort of thing. And then he does this impersonation of a white guy trying to tell a black guy to get out of his seat. And it's just hilarious. And eventually the black guy pushes back and then the white guy caves. And then the guy's like, hey, I don't know you, but here's my wife, you know. It's hilarious. And it was the antithesis of this cancel culture. God, I try to say that. I keep saying cancer culture. And what's really contradictory about this entire situation is that you have these extremists, which are your super mega far lefters, right? And they are, on one end, teaching people the divide, right? Black Lives Matter comes out of absolutely thin air. And of course, there are always bad things happening to everyone around the world in different pockets here and there. And so they messed with a bunch of statistics and made it look like white cops are the only reason why anyone dies in this world. And Candace Owens has done a beautiful job re-educating all the ghettos that it's actually, unfortunately, a lot of black-on-black crime. Now, nobody should be killing anybody, okay? No one's trying to make two wrongs a right by any means, right? But that exacerbates this thing. They have white people hating themselves, this whole white privilege thing. All right. You know, this notion that you can get rid of privilege and somehow just have a wonderful world. Everybody is without privilege, and you want to live in that world. Okay, well then, how are you going to make a movie? How are you going to make an album? How are you going to invent the next car, the next television? I mean, maybe we don't need some of that stuff, but you have to have people in privileged situations, irrespective of their race, in order to make certain things occur. You know, Isaac Newton invented calculus by the age of 19. Okay, I guess the guy didn't have to pay any bills while he was doing that. You know, you weren't considered a child at 18 like you are today. In his world, you should start working probably around the age of 10 to 12 just to bring in some money. And again, you know, all of these metrics that people try to throw down to say you have privilege and therefore I have the right to hate you. Okay, so you get rid of every white person on planet Earth. The problem is you're talking about a mental illness that is being propagated as some social imperative. So you have a family. You've got some brothers and sisters. You're not out of school yet, so you still live at home. I can assure you that if you have two siblings of the same sex, one of you is a lot more pretty than the other one. One of you might be of a more acceptable shape, according to society on that particular day. And the other one might be considered obese. Now what? You have no other people to hate. All the white people are gone. So now you get to hate your sister because she's pretty. Or hate your sister because she's obese. Or vice versa, brother, sister, whatever. I think most people are starting to wake up now when you have this, I don't know what Greta's mental problems are. But it's pretty clear. I mean, I think they say she has Asperger's. This kid looks like the kind of child that would be the result of being in an MKUltra mental institution pretty much up until the day they exhibitioned her mental condition around as some activist. Oh, okay. So you literally search the entire planet. Instead of finding utter prodigies, you find kids that have mental problems. And you parade them around the world as if for any reason they have any level of authority on anything when they can't control their own brain to operate properly. So there's something fucked up about that. There really is. It's morally irresponsible to parade a child around like that. And especially, let's just say she's legit. I think she's one of the worst actresses on planet Earth. But let's say she's legitimately having her child destroyed by all of us normal thinking people. Okay. So someone is now telling a child with mental problems, okay, I would say she is in the category of mental retardation in that her brain does not think as quickly as most of our brains. That's what I would say as a just a shady tree psychologist, okay? And so someone's whispering in her ear that the world is coming to an end. They're whispering in her ear that she's going to lose her childhood, or she did lose her childhood because of all these faux climate change, you know, pseudoscience, deep state, Agenda 21, carbon taxation, depopulating agendas. What would be the difference? I'm being completely serious here. What would be the difference in going into a mental institution and finding some young girl who is scared of something? She's scared of clowns, let's just say. And you put her in a room and you incessantly dress people up like clowns and you make them look really horrifying, that it clown, right? And you Pennywise, and you just keep bringing, and they're just, you have strobe lights on and it's a dark room and John Podesta's in there in his fluorescent pink demanding that the child call him Skippy, and he's just, they're just terrorizing this girl in the corner. What's the huge difference? I'm not sure there's any difference. If Greta is truly a kid with Asperger's, which means she is going to be analyzing things at a intense level. And I got plenty of friends of mine with clinical Asperger's, and they don't act anything like Greta. They're fully functional. They don't they don't have all of her weird emotional tics and strange inability to seem genuine. I mean, she seems like a bad actress. I'm not buying, quite frankly, any mental condition that she has. I just think she's a horrible actress, and we've seen better actresses pretend stories in front of the Senate to get, you know, Saddam Hussein kicked out of Kuwait. But it used to be that your kid would go through weird phases, and you just sort of, you know, nudge them in the right direction, My kid didn't have any of this stuff, but I've seen it in my small town, especially when I moved around and got to be in the big city as a kid and see a lot of families that, you know, saw them go to school. And you just let them get through it. And 9 times out of 10, if not 99 times out of 100, the kid comes through and becomes someone that, that could be married and be a father or a mother. And they're fine. It's almost every single time. But what they're trying to do today by the objective of depopulation is they want your child to freeze frame in this weird state of existence, perhaps because they watch a unicorn cartoon or something strange on the internet. They get mentally disturbed by what they see. They start portraying what they see. Let's just say they, you know, they haven't even thought about what orientation they are yet. You know, it used to be pretty normal that kids would go up to at least 10 to 12 to 13. And if you asked a girl if she liked boys up to that point, you know, it'd be like, ooh, yuck. You know, that's why I got the word cooties. And same with the boys. You'd say, hey, you know, do you like her? She's pretty cute. Ew, gross. You know, you don't want to kiss her? Oh, man, gross. And they'd start spitting, you know, and it's like, that's what kids used to be like. But today, you've got kids that supposedly, they got these fucked up parents, right? Somehow a kid wants to have a sex change at 7 years old, you know? There's that video going around of that poor kid, man. I hope some cops got involved with this thing, child protection care or something. But the father's interviewing his son, who's got a like a shirt on his head. And he says, you know, what are you doing? Oh, I'm a girl. Oh, you are? Yeah, well, mommy says I'm a girl. And, you know, when I'm with her, she dresses up me in dresses. I told you, I got a second cousin who had a crazy mother, dressed him up like a little girl until he was like, you know, I don't know, 12 years old. Well, what do you think his orientation is today? Did he just magically have a crazy mother and he's gay? No, he had a crazy mother. And as he was trying to figure out the basics of life, he got programmed behaviorally by his crazy mother. And, you know, he's a radical leftist now. Go figure. And what just blows my mind about that whole thing is that the defense mechanism starts to shoot up, right? I have no doubt that if I were to interview that guy and ask him that exact question, hey, come on, I saw a picture personally of you at 9 years old dressed up like a little girl with a little bobby haircut and that kind of stuff, and everybody in town knows your mother wanted a girl for her third child, you happen to be a boy, and so she just didn't accept the fact that you had beans and franks, so she raised you like a little girl. Don't you think that had a profound effect on who you are as a human being? Are you going to throw this deal at me that you have a gene in your body that changed you over to this? You'd probably defend it. I have always been this way. I've always known I'm this way. And it's like, you probably have. But can you pull back for a split second, look at yourself from 60,000 feet, look at the history of your life and go, yeah, my mom completely fucked me up. She dictated my orientation instead of allowing me to find it. Now I got friends who found it. Nobody pushed them in any directions. And there you go. Whatever happened, happened. They picked it. Picked it. Sometimes I have a friend of mine who said he knew by 4 years old. Nobody was molesting the guy. Nobody was doing anything. Quite the opposite. And he found his way. Okay, great. They want your kids screwed up as soon as humanly possible. If they can't get your kid to have a seizure and rot their brain with the vaccination, they want them to be undereducated so they can't get any work. They want your kid to be rejected by society. You know, I have this weird suspicion that if we actually somehow fully embraced all LGBTQXYZ or whatever they can come up with, it would anger the elite. It would anger them that, you know, maybe these guys would still have kids. You know, your trainees still have kids, and your bisexual people still have kids, and both lesbian and gay still have kids. What if that just started happening? So they could be exactly who they want to be, orientation-wise, but they still have kids. Guarantee you, there'd be something against those people the second that they started procreating. But as long as they're willing to take one for the team, the big banking cartel team, there's going to be support for these organizations. It's just the way it is. But let's get back to the cancel culture. Right now, it's a problem for celebrities. It's a problem for film studios. You know, you tweeted something a long time ago, you posted something on Facebook a long time ago, and boy, they're going to come after you. And there's two halves to it that's both, it's sick and it's unfortunate that we've allowed society to get to this point. One, you have your little cesspool of scumbags that actually instigate this thing. And I wouldn't be the slightest bit surprised if there isn't some George Soros-funded anti-PR group that goes out and pulls the sweaters to get this started. But the sickest thing about it is, you know, we know there's some disgruntled human being in some coffee shop somewhere, you know, just literally looking for this all day long. We know that's the case. But what's worse is that you have these other people who are in the just normal citizens, I guess. I wouldn't say they're normal. They're dysfunctional. But they're at home in their houses taking the lead on it. And then going after it in the thousands, right? Tens of thousands of people. I do think it is a tiny, tiny group of people that are causing all the problems for everyone, because it doesn't take much for a company to get nervous about something. But we know that there's gang stalking, right? This is when you get rammed on the internet. You could have a job somewhere. They find out where you work. They talk to that boss and that boss fires you because they just simply can't handle standing up for the Constitution of the United States. They want all the benefits of the Constitution themselves, but they're not willing to stand up for it when it comes to one of their employees having a differing opinion than theirs. But then you have different layers of the entire experience, right? You have people who are legitimately doing things that are bad. You know, what is it, Prince Henry? He showed up at a Halloween party some 10 years ago, and he was wearing a Nazi armband with a Nazi tan officer's outfit on or whatever. But he's royalty, so he gets to do it. No problem there. Then you have this blackface thing. Trudeau, who I am absolutely not a fan of, he's Castro's son, if you don't know. He showed up as Aladdin, and so he tanned out his face. He's a theater guy to begin with, right? Wasn't he a drama teacher or something like that? But a lot of people have worn blackface, which is a different thing, right? Blackface is a vaudeville thing that a few white guys did back in the day, and they would act less intelligent on stage, making fun of blacks in that era, a certain category of the older blacks from that era, because the younger ones were not having, you know, these issues. They were making fun of a slice of the black culture here in America. Utterly offensive, right? But I have known people that have, well, let's just take Dave Chappelle and Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy was the first one on Saturday Night Live to dress in whiteface. He did a brilliant, funny skit. Later on, 20 years later, 15 years later, whatever it was, Dave Chappelle did it on the Dave Chappelle Show. He took it to the next limit, right? And it's all a parody on the stereotypical perception that when you're white, you go to a bank. I think it was Dave Chappelle that did it, but it may have been Eddie Murphy. I can't remember. One of them went to the bank and he was going to apply for a loan and he thought he had to fill out all the paperwork. And what they did was as soon as like a black assistant left the room, they just looked at the door closed and they go, you don't have to fill that stuff here. And they just gave him like, you know, $40,000 cash. Do you really want to go back in a time machine and get rid of those skits? What are you, an asshole? Give me a break. That shit was hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. And I can't imagine that more than one or two people got offended watching it when millions and millions of people are watching it. I know people that have dressed up like black people for Halloween, but their intent is that they absolutely adored the black culture. They adored black music, black fashion. And they knew that they were corny white people any other day but Halloween. And so what they did was they dressed up. They used to sell black afros all the time at Halloween stores. I think they still do. Well, who's allowed to wear that, right? You're supposed to wear it with white face? Doesn't make any sense, right? But I've seen people do that. And for that night, they felt bigger than life. They felt cooler than they ever have in their life, being able to impersonate a culture that they adored. It wasn't to talk in some broken English or to make fun of anybody. If anything, it was quite the opposite. But what is it now? You touch a little bit of black makeup and put it on your face and you're white. Well, then you're mocking these people. If I wanted to dress up like a Native American because I have long hair and I happen to absolutely love everything that I've ever learned about Native American culture, and the first film I ever wrote, I did a tremendous amount of research into it, visited reservations, and my heart broken for the suffering that these folks have done. But if I wanted to honor them in some costume event, I don't want to hear anyone telling me that I'm making fun of them or mocking them. I think it was Ted Danson who was dating Whoopi Goldberg for a little while. Man, if you can just put that together in your brain, you're a bigger man than me. But he did show up at some event with blackface, the old-fashioned kind, where you paint your lips white, and that was like, what were you thinking, man? You can't dress up like a Nazi and get away with it? What happy stories are told about Nazis? None. All right. But okay, let's keep it going. How many people show up at these events dressed like the devil? How can you do that? He's always the bad guy. He's always the bad guy. But they sell the devil outfit on Amazon and no one's calling to have it taken down. We have double standards all over the place if you really want to start to censor our existence. What would you do if anyone walked up to you randomly on the street? They're a big guy. Very, very specifically a male with upper body strength. And they just grabbed you and held you. And you couldn't move. You couldn't move your arms. And you couldn't fight out of their grip because they're much, much bigger than you. Well, you're at least going to try to get out of that grip. You're going to try even if it's an irrational thing for you to do. Because it is your nature to want freedom. If someone came up to you and said, I'm going to sew your mouth shut. I'm going to surgically remove your tongue. You're not going to be able to speak anymore. How would you feel about that? You'd be like, hey, you know, whatever. I've talked enough. It's over. Really? So what's the difference between someone passing some sort of law, some sort of psycho, insane cultural norm that says you can't be who you are? Now, again, some people, again, I've got some super leftists in my family that try to win the argument by saying, oh, I guess what you're saying, like I've said this before, I know I'm repeating myself, but we're here now. I had this person tell me, oh, I guess what you're trying to say is that we want to call all the black people the N-word again. As if that had any intellectual capacity or rationale in anyone's normal mind. I mean, seriously speaking, probably one of the most ignorant, stupid things I've ever heard another human being ever say. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Boy, I don't get enough of the N-word out of my mouth. I feel like I'm being repressed, right? Remember the formula, right? If you were to sit at a table having a conversation with one of these morons, right? One of these triggered, cancel culture, political correct morons and assholes and bullies across from a table. And it was some theoretical thing. It's infinite. And you're talking. Eventually, you're going to bump into some words that they're going to try to use their useless life to control your life, right? They've got no command over their own life. They hate the mirror more than anything in the entire universe. And so they want you to be punished because they view themselves horribly. Okay. So you go, oh, I can't say that word anymore? Yeah, I can't say that word anymore. Well, what word can I use? And they give you a new word. Okay. And you replace that in your brain. One, it's starting to create cognitive dissonance because the word you were using is exactly the right word. But now they're giving you some, in their mind, softer phrase. Used to be retarded. Now it's mentally handicapped. Mentally handicapped is going to be mentally impaired. And the mentally impaired is going to be something else. But if you sit there with them infinitely, whatever they gave you to replace that word with, eventually, when you comply with all of their control mechanisms, then all of a sudden you're able to be free because you're using all the words that are okay. They have no more authority over you. But that's the name of the game for a bully, for a moron, for a person who hates themselves. And so they're going to think up new words. They're going to start demonizing new words you've never heard of. And they're going to start demonizing the old ones because those are the old go-tos, man. A word is what you think it means, man. And so you need to be careful with what you think something means. Clinical words being demonized is so laughable. Now, someone could suggest a word that you might choose to use because it sounds a little bit better than the previous word. That's a free society simply refining language a little bit. You know, it used to be, for instance, at least when I was a kid, and you'll still see references to this you know, in videos that are 30, 40, 50 years old. But it used to be a respectable phrase to call a black person Negro. They thought of that word as a upper echelon reference to a black person, because they knew about the other word, the other N-word that was never considered to be anything but a derogatory reference. But you can't see Negro anymore either, because in the head, it's been conditioned, that person doesn't like you, that person doesn't like you. They're making you a subhuman by calling you that. Well, it's just like saying Caucasian. That's all it is. Now, black is, they're not black, right? Nobody in the world is black, okay? If you go to Africa, they're a little bit darker, okay? But just like calling a white person, okay, you go to Ireland, you can actually find white people. But most people have a bunch of different pinks and a bunch of different shades in them. They're never one color. So Negro was next to Caucasian, and black was next to white, if you want to go for a color, right? All of it's nonsensical, random, arbitrary references to each other. But I'm going to repeat something. It's a bit of a spoiler from Dave Chappelle's stand-up comedy routine, so you've been warned. This is brilliant, though. Hearing it from me doesn't destroy anything. He has a routine about talking to the censors of his show, and it was a double standard they had about certain words you could use and certain words you couldn't use. And he has an absolutely brilliant, profound, a truly profound realization that he reveals on his special. And I'm not going to try to recreate it because, you know, you need to hear it from his voice. But I literally was just stunned when I heard it. I was like, oh my God, that is absolutely true. And it was the bit when you see it, it is about the double standard of him being able to use the N-word and not being able to use a word that starts with F that refers to gay people, and this double standard that they had internally, and he twisted it such that the censor probably didn't get it, but so that we could understand that there was this crazy double standard about the way that language is used. So I think the big thing I would personally like to see would be the public endorsing, well, one, categorically rejecting this notion of gang stalking people for their past, right? Dave Chappelle talks about how they gang stalked Kevin Hart out of being able to host the Oscars, right? Because he made a joke. He made a joke that was completely a joke inside of a joke. I mean, it was like the most ridiculous thing. And it was about if Kevin Hart found his son playing with dolls, he said that the punishment he would do to his son would be to smash a dollhouse over his head, which is a completely ridiculous thing. One, you'd never do that, but two, how would you have a dollhouse in the first place? You know, you would know ahead of time, right? But it was just a stupid joke he made a really long time ago, and someone dug that up, threw it at the Academy, and of course, they're such virtue signaling folks that they took away a dream of his. The people really were the ones that took away the dream. But what's also so strange is that in organizations like TMZ.com, if you've never gone, you don't need to go, but it is the most vile rag of worshiping everything that is wrong with the world. I mean, worshiping the sluttiest behavior on planet Earth, as well as some of the most, you know, anti-productive, conspicuous consumption of cars and jewelry and just the whole, you know, gang violence thing inside rap. I mean, TMZ is the kind of organization that would get two gangs to fight over each other and to kill each other, right? They would run to one gang and said, you know what that gang said about you? And they'd run over to the other gang and said, you know what they said about you? And they get them to fight. And then the second that everybody kills each other, they're right there to make money off of the death that they instigated. I mean, they're there for the whole life cycle of a celebrity. the, hey, this person's coming up. Oh, look how bad they look now. And look at the ugly person that they ended up marrying. Or, hey, did you know when they got divorced, this is because of this, this, and this, a bunch of personal crap that's none of your fucking business in the first place. And people go up there because they hate themselves, again, right? And they want to know that celebrities also have horrible moments in life. Because there can't be anyone in life who gets through this thing without suffering. That's the kind of people we're talking about here. Mentally ill human beings. They're mentally ill. Something happened to them. Again, could be the toxins they fill their body with. Could be the shitty parents that they had. Could be just they were totally okay at 18, kicked out of the house to go live a life, and they just couldn't make it happen because they don't have enough IQ to live their own sovereign life, right? You know, when you're raised in, at least in America, you'll definitely learn about all the crazy moments in time where, you know, the morons of the world destroy the geniuses of the world. Happens all the time. Why do you think Egypt is a big relic of ancient history? Because the Egyptians were wiped out. And why were they wiped out? Because they had abolished war. If they ever had war, they managed to get rid of it. And they had chariots simply for the sake of maybe having a celebration, perhaps hunting, maybe, right? But when factions came around that didn't have that brilliance, they got jealous. The haves and the have-nots, right? So they had to take it away. They had to destroy something wonderful and set us back. God knows how many millennia, how many tens of thousands of millennia they set us back. You know, Genghis Khan went all across Europe, all across Eurasia and Europe. Now, think about it. Did someone in Germania hurt Genghis Khan clear on the other side of the continent? No. The guy was just a dick. The guy just prioritized building an army. And so they raped and pillaged all the way across this continent. Okay. Isn't that the precursor story to most folks that go and persecute another country? But now we've actually got every piece of real estate claimed, right? There's not any real estate in the world that isn't owned by some country. And you got some islands in the Pacific, people arguing over who gives a shit, right? So now what are they doing? Now who is pulling the strings and why are they pulling the strings? I think it's funny that it used to be when I was a kid, when you were dumb as a bag of hammers, you knew you were dumb as a bag of hammers. You just knew. And you didn't try to compete with those that were smarter than you. As long as you weren't being repressed, you never even acted out violently. You knew that if you wanted to get smart, if you needed to get smart, you'd had to go learn something from somebody. Right? You just did. Or you were totally fine with not knowing a bunch of stuff and you just, you know, had a beautiful, simple life. You lived happily ever after. Maybe even happier than those that were technically more intelligent than you. Okay. I think that's great. I know a lot of people like that. I'm envious of some people that are more simple with their lives because they're happier than I am. I'm a pretty happy guy, you know. But today, if we were to line up everyone in the United States of America and actually have them take some sort of test, and the test would go like this. Without taking an IQ test, how smart do you think you are? How high do you think your IQ is in comparison to the smartest people in the world? And I think that you would find that the more intelligent people with the higher IQs would actually be underestimating their intelligence, and your Antifa douchebags would be putting their IQs way up there. Oh, I know I'm probably 180, at least 180, probably 250. They think they're utterly brilliant. Isn't that funny how that works? I mean, I guarantee you there's a huge part of that that's true. Guarantee. And what is the cycle today? You start talking to somebody who's obviously full of it. And if you start to slowly and calmly and graciously try to reveal the fact that maybe they're not as intelligent as they think they are, as informed as they think they are. Maybe they should go look into it again. Maybe they should do a little bit of research instead of just watching CNN. Today, they'll throw shakes on you, hit you in the face with padlocks, try to slam their skateboard because they can't afford a car. They're getting violent now. They're getting violent because they hate the experience of being in their own skin. That's what it is. Can you imagine, though, waking up and you hate who you are as a human being? I mean, I'm not talking about disliking your life a little bit or kind of feeling you made some wrong decisions. These kids feel broken to the core. And probably because they have 36 vaccinations inside themselves, plus whatever flu shots that come around, and they believe all this news about, you know, these diseases that are almost completely eradicated off the face of the planet. As some pharmaceutical company provides a vaccination, they take it. So their neurons in their brain are just being shredded on a daily basis. They're disoriented. Hate is probably not a word that remotely efficiently describes what they feel about themselves. So then you might take it to the next level and go, well, geez, can we rehabilitate these people? I think the answer is probably yes. But as I mentioned in a previous episode, you have a problem that it's going to take a lot of time. And the most vivid example that I gave in a previous video is, which is probably in my cultural racism video, is the white people that stood in line outside of the schools that were being desegregated as the black kids got off the bus. There's this famous scene with this black girl who's dressed to the nines. She looks amazing. And she's walking into the school. And some white girl with all of her KKK Democrats standing behind her, she's a Democrat too, by the way, is screaming obscenities at this girl. And I mean, just the empathetic, just even the tiniest bit of empathy for this black girl, you just want to, like, you want to punch the white girl in the face and you want to give this black girl a hug for having to endure such horrible acidic behavior from anybody, but especially someone who's, you know, privileged, yelling at some kid who's just trying to get a good education. It's just hideous, right? But they're all Democrats down there. We're yelling at the blacks. Remember, the Democrats, up until 1959, on the laws, fought desegregation. But later on, 20 years later or 30 years later, I don't know when this woman was recorded, but they found that white girl. And they did an interview in her living room. And she was sobbing with tears running down her face because she had finally got away from the Democrats and figured out that, hey, Republicans believe that everyone's made equal in different ways, but we're made equal. And she had figured out that she had basically worshipped the devil because of a party affiliation with the Democrats. And, you know, I can't remember if they ever found the black girl to interview her. I would have loved to have seen that. Would love to have seen them in the same room together. You know, like see the apology go across the room, man. That would have been nice. Maybe that, I can't remember that happening. So we've been here before. We've seen people repair themselves. You know, part of my hope is that we can continue taking the piss out of these people that are like this. You know, again, remind an Antifa kid that the Confederate flag is a Democratic flag. Remind the Antifa kid that the statues that they tore down of Confederate soldiers were Democrat Confederate statues. Remind them that MLK was a Republican. You know, these are little basic things. The KKK was a Democrat organization. And you have to remind them that there was no flip in the 70s. The only thing that they did is they did the demonic devil thing, which is to go on TV and say, oh yeah, we totally worship Satan at the Church of Satan down the street. But, you know, contrary to rumor, we don't actually sacrifice human beings and children and drink their blood and all that kind of stuff. And so you take that. I mean, some people take that and go, well, you know, they interviewed those people and they said they don't do that. Okay, moron. Yeah, you really think you're going to get a truthful answer out of the devil? You really think that that's how the dude rolls? You really think that church, under the threat of being closed down, is going to admit, well, we only kill a few of you folks, right? I mean, you know, you got to have something on the side of the milk carton, right? Once we cease tolerating mental illness as something we have to integrate with society, as in the mental illness is going to be an option for your children and their behavior, once we get rid of that, we're on the right track. Once we see a violent protest with an organization that hides their face, runs a, what is it, Mussolini's flag with a different color scheme. Once we go, okay, now you're a terrorist organization, your whole organization from New York City to Los Angeles, you are considered terrorists. We're going to activate the police force of this country, including maybe even reserve military, that if you show up with this flag, if you show up with your face covered up, we're going to bash your head in and put you in the back of a truck. And you're going to go to jail for a very long time. 10-year mandatory no parole sentences because you're part of a terrorist organization. Once we get to that point, we're making some progress, in my opinion. And if you think that that's crazy, you haven't been hit in the face by a Berkeley professor who ties a padlock to the end of a rope and slams you in the face because, again, he's a loser. He's a complete loser, right? Trump uses that word a lot and everyone gets all bent out of shape. And it's like, nah, Trump is looking at a bunch of children that have run this country for a long time, given away all of our jobs, all of our trade, all of our aid. And what do we get in return? Wars and people who hate us to death. Oh, boy, what would be a bad thing to first pick out the swamp members and go, these are all losers. These are all scumbags. They all need to go. You know, people who are still senators after 20, 30 years of being in that business. Come on. What's the motivation to not go enjoy life? Why is Nancy Pelosi at 79 still being a huge pain in the ass to everybody? Feinstein, 85 years old. Go fucking relax, would you? Take your ill-gotten gains and go enjoy your precursor to hell, okay? Which is the last few years of your life on this planet. And what's really strange about it is that here's what I haven't heard so far. I haven't heard a case where there's a cancel culture thing going on. And let's say there's, you know, 5,000 morons who write into the Academy to get Kevin Hart thrown off of the Oscars. But 20,000 people write letters saying, don't pay attention to those other 5,000 people, or whatever it is. We want the guy to host the thing. And have the Academy go, oh, well, you know, the majority of people actually seem to like this guy. Well, we don't want to take the risk. And he still let the minority speak. Or maybe it's just a big virtue signaling thing. Or maybe they got something against black people. Who knows? But I'd like to see that done once. And us win, you know? What can you do to stop it? I don't know. Why don't you go rent Blazing Saddles off some streaming, you know, service? Put the statistics out there that you're still interested in things that could not be made today. You know, Hollywood has died and been reborn several times. But it happens in real time, so we don't quite identify the death of Hollywood. One of the huge deaths of Hollywood that happened was during the 60s. And for those of you who are movie buffs, you'll know this is very true. Hollywood got extremely formulaic, and they always usually mention like Elvis movies as being sort of the bottom of that era. Now, technically these movies are fun because we just like seeing Elvis move around and hear him talk instead of sing. So that was kind of fun. They're shot in Technicolor. But other than a few masterpieces, coming out of the 60s, normal movies weren't being as watched as much, right? Plus, television was exploding. By 1965, RCA had lost the patent on color television. So everybody went color. But this is when the, you know, the indie movie thing started occurring. People were able to buy their own cameras. And so you saw a bunch of wild films like John Waters stuff, which I'm not a big fan of, but, you know, he did it. So a bunch of wild things occurred, you know, Rocky Horror Picture Show and just tons of stuff in the 70s. And yeah, there are a lot of crappy movies when they made the transition over to the indie stuff. Even Kubrick sort of waited for all that to boil off, and then he made Clockwork Orange, which was, for him, as I understand it, was fairly an indie process, you know. There's a lot of rumors that, and I should ask Vivian, but I've heard that the movie never officially had a script. He just passed out the paperback book and said, okay, we're in this page, let's go. Of course, he makes changes and alterations to it. So I think we're at a point now where, yeah, I think CG was a rebirth of Hollywood in the 90s. We had had the 70s and the 80s with in-camera effects like Star Wars. And then we got to CG, and CG started changing everything. And there was this huge rebirth. And now we're at the death of CG, right? People are tired of movies with CG bad guys. You know, how many CG bad guys are in John Wick? Zero. John Wick's doing well. Yeah, there's still Jumanjis and Marvel movies and all that kind of stuff, but I think, you know, everyone's sort of even tired of the Marvel formula. We like them, okay, but we don't want 20 more. We just don't. And so we're now getting back to more meat and potato movies. It's cool. But if anything, the cancel culture has shown you a beautiful reveal of the dimensions by which we exist as human beings, because they are picking apart these dimensions. They're using any technique in the book to succeed in piercing these dimensions and using it against us to cancel culture. I mean, I know it's a double entendre. It's the culture of getting people canceled off of their shows and getting comedians booed off stage and all that kind of stuff. It's all about how much can you hate, which I'd like to see Twitter go out of business, quite frankly. I think it is unlike anything we have ever had in the history of the world in terms of acidic incubation of human behavior. We have seen it in countries. You know, what is it, Mao Zedong got a bunch of people killed in China by incubating up things. Hitler did the same thing. Pol Pot did the same thing. Stalin did the same thing. And so we've seen this in history in specific areas, but now we have global hatred. And, you know, it's just one of these things, like, when are you going to activate your mutant gene? When are you going to start... And I'm not really talking to you guys because you guys are the choir, but as you conversate with other people, these are the touch points. When are you going to have skin in the game? When are you going to just turn off social media? You know, I've in the last, I'd say, week, I've looked up a few actors and actresses because I think that they would do well for some of the stuff I'm writing. And I was shocked that some of them have no social media. And I mean, they don't have a website that they control. They don't have any Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or anything. And it's stunning to find. I'm just like, it's almost like I want to find them in the world and tell them that I'm proud of them. They're staying out of the game. They're focusing on their lives. You know, what is the trend today? Go do something fairly cool, or, you know, whatever, at least in the camera is going to look amazing, and get it to social media as quickly as possible. Make everyone jealous of what you're doing. It's rough, and we've got to grow up as a society. Maybe this is something that is allowing us to expose these acidic attributes of our ego, of our id, that now we can stomp them out, right? The roaches of our of our mind have crawled out under the refrigerator, you know, and we can see them now. And now we just need to run around stomping them all out so that they can die. And then what's left is a human being. I'll close with this phrase, or with this sentiment here. I've told you guys ad nauseum that I grew up in a little tiny town in southeast Kansas. And I remember being a kid, and for a good majority of the portion I spent there, I loved it, and I just embraced it. You know, I mean, my whole family lived in that town, both sides of the family. All the shops downtown were fun to visit. Every street was fun to go down on my bicycle or whatever, my car when I grew up. But as I got older in my teens, I remember having pings by watching television that all the kids in the big city were getting all these privileges that I was not getting where I lived. I was jealous. I thought they were getting better educations. They definitely had more things to do. And there's probably some truth to that. But now I look at kids today, and they are exposed to so many horrific things on a daily basis, be it violence, be it social programming, that I feel like I am the last generation of the lucky kids to have had all my formative years outside of this horrific thing that is social media. Now, there's obviously benefits to it, of course, there always is. And probably the negative stuff, I don't know, if you're in Twitter, it's all negative. But there's definitely great things. You know, YouTube, man, I have learned so many things from YouTube, it's crazy. So there's still a lot of virtue and benefit from some of these platforms. And if we, what's happened to these platforms is that society is programming the platforms by throwing around all their offense, right? Lest we get offended, the less these folks will care. You know, we do know that a lot of these folks are deep staters. That's going to take a few decades to totally clean it out globally. And we'll get it done. We'll get it done. I'd be interested in your observations in this. Maybe even more poignantly, if you have seen corrections to these horrible situations where people have dug themselves out of situations, maybe that's the that's some of the comments that you could leave. You know, if I was doing another episode on cancer and there's 10 of you that have cured cancer with watermelons and magnets or whatever it is, right? And by the way, I'm making that up, but let's just say you have solutions. Your comments could save a life. So in this particular case, think about your social comments and commentary, maybe even saving a life, getting a kid out of the hatred bubble. Or, you know, you're passing something on to someone else that then they can take off to their kid or their relative or their friend. And it's just the way you phrase it is the way that's going to make the difference, which is why a comment is worth, you know, entire lifetimes. Anyway, they can feel me. If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. I'm going to do a super short bumper. There are options for video, audio, social media, donating to the page, and the all-new remastered Season 1. So get up there and partake. Until the next episode, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over and out.